What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, senior NBA insider for HoopsHype.com and the host of the Hoops Hype podcast. The Detroit Pistons had the worst record in the NBA this season and one of the worst seasons all time, which included a 28-game losing streak, which is tied for the longest all time. With that in mind, there's going to be a lot of changes for the Pistons this offseason, one would expect. And with that in mind, I'm joined by my friend, my former colleague, James Edwards, who covers the Detroit Pistons for The Athletic. And we're going to break down what's expected to be a busy offseason ahead. How's the offseason treating you so far, my man?
Hey, man. It hasn't been too bad, I guess, for just a couple days. Exit interviews were Monday. Recording this on Friday. Got a couple days with some friends to do normal human stuff. So it's been pretty chill the last few days, but helping out with playoff coverage at the Athletic. So I'll be in Phoenix at the end of next week to cover a couple games there between them and the Timberwolves. And I'll be dealing with this. So just trying to find some chill time when I can amid all the craziness that'll likely be happening the next month and a half.
For sure. And, you know, you talked about the craziness. It was a wild year for Detroit. I don't think there's any secret there. Troy Weaver getting into it with fans a little bit. The losing streak. There was a lot on the plate for Detroit this year. But looking ahead to the offseason, they have about, well, if they want, they could have up to $60 million in cap space if they decline Evan Fournier's team option and they let go of Troy Brown. So that's a significant amount of cap space. And, you know, I think everyone is looking for them to do what the Houston Rockets did and spend all the cap space that they have available. But I definitely wanted to get into it with you on this, brother. But from what I've heard, plan A is not to go the Houston Rockets route and spend all the cap space money that they have in free agency. There's a possibility that Detroit will look to sign a free agent like Tobias Harris or Miles Bridges, for example. Two guys that are certainly going to be on their radar heading into the offseason, and then use the remaining cap space to potentially acquire a player in a trade. Whether it's Detroit or other teams around the league, they're all monitoring these playoff teams that fail to meet expectations and could either make a change to shake things up, or a star player on one of those teams becomes disgruntled and wants out. So with that in mind, I mean, like, is that kind of the sense you've gotten, James, that it's not just spend till you go broke in free agency and that they are looking at the trade market as well?
Yeah, and definitely something I've heard and wrote a little bit about dating back to like December. Now, does that change depending on who comes in to run president of basketball operations? Certainly, it could change. But I always kind of was under the impression they would look hard at two of the guys you named, specifically Tobias Harris, the Miles Bridges of the world. I could even see like Nick Claxton out in Brooklyn. And then I think they were going to go the trade route and try to add talent that way. I mean, they have potentially they're going to have a top five pick, could obviously be number one in a draft that I don't think you're beating yourself up if you move out of that one of those slots. They have a lot of young guys already, and I think they're at the point where they might have to even move some of the young guys that they have just because of the situation they find themselves in. So I think that they could do a significant like roster overhaul through a combination of trades. And then, like you said, signing, a like B level talent, in the off season. And I know the notion in Detroit is like, oh, if we sign Tobias Harris, we're going to give him it's going to be for the max. And it's like, I'm just not sure that's the case. I think you could get Tobias maybe bigger money, but shorter years, allow him to go out into the market one more time to try to get more money. Like, I don't think they'll like max any of the guys that they would bring in free agency. I wouldn't worry about that.
A great point you just made. We saw Houston do that with Fred VanVleet, where they increased his average annual salary on a short-term deal. Certainly could make sense for Tobias. And and Miles Bridges. Aside from those guys, I mean, I believe this is the fourth consecutive season Detroit is ranked bottom 10 in three-point shooting. So do you see them going out and maybe adding shooters, whether it's just for example, there are guys on the market like Malik Monk, Buddy Hield. Do you see them targeting shooting and any of those guys specifically?
Yeah, I definitely think they should. I know that they pseudo tried to do that last summer by trading for Joe Harris and Monte Morris. Monte Morris ended up not being able to play until like game 42 or something like that because of various injuries. Joe Harris struggled to get in the rotation even when he was healthy. They didn't really get the development from certain players within the roster outside of Cade Cunningham and Isaiah Stewart as three-point shooters. Everybody else kind of stayed the same or got worse. And then as much as I love Asar Thompson and factor in or and believe he's going to be a really good player in this league, like his shooting is nowhere near where it needs to be, and he played significant minutes for this team. So they definitely need to add three-point shooting. They did so at the deadline with a long-term piece in Simone Fontecchio, who was phenomenal in his time in Detroit. I think there's no question he's back next year, regardless of who's running the show. He checked a lot of boxes. And then they have to go out and get more three-point shooters. Malik Monk is a name I wouldn't be surprised if they target in free agency. I would monitor teams like Brooklyn and Atlanta, who I think are at crossroads and have players who fit a lot of the archetype that Detroit needs. And I think there's going to be a lot of bad teams in the NBA next year, as the 2025 draft is expected to be pretty stocked with high-end talent. So I think the Pistons could capitalize with their cap space, the assets that they do have, and maybe bring in like three-ish legitimate NBA rotation guys via trade. And I would imagine the majority of those would have to be able to knock down some three-point shots too.
I mean, listen, you don't have to sell me on Simone Fontecchio or Forza Azzurri. My paisan. We are a small bunch, but we certainly keep tabs on each other. You brought up some good points, though, about the shooting and Malik Monk and as a guy that they could potentially go after. Joe Harris. Yeah, you know, I fell for Joe. Obviously, his injuries took a little bit of a toll on him from the end of Brooklyn. And, you know, he was a good veteran locker room guy, but yeah, harder for him to have an impact last season. One guy I got to ask you real quick, you kind of mentioned Nick Claxton among some potential candidates. Now, I had recently done, before we recorded this, a Nets podcast, and I was catching up with Brian Lewis at the New York Post. He thinks it's over 50% chance he stays. When I was looking at the market free agent-wise, Detroit was not necessarily one of the teams I'm looking at because they have Jalen Duren. You kind of implied that you maybe wouldn't be surprised if they went after him. I'm just curious on Nick Claxton. What makes you say that when they have Duren there?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues for the Pistons this year was lack of rim protection. For all of the upside Duren has as a guy who is already an elite rebounder at 20, has good touch around the rim, has shown some playmaking stuff here and there, he's really, really got to improve defensively. And I think that goes back to what I said at the top of the pod, where I think the situation Detroit finds itself in, where it's gotten better or gotten worse every year of this rebuild. They just came off 14 wins, 28 game losing streak. Like, there's pressure, I think, to be better sooner rather than later. I don't think they have the luxury of what most rebuilding teams do, which is let their guys develop or give them the opportunity and time to develop. Not all of them. They have to get better. And I think Nick Claxton would definitely check a box in which Detroit desperately needs checked, and that's, I mean, interior defense. And Isaiah Stewart is a really, really good defender. He defends well in space and on the perimeter. He actually isn't a bad rim protector, but they need somebody there next to him or a primary option at center as Isaiah shifted to the four more that can defend. And I'm not saying that that means Duren's gone. I just wonder if maybe they bring him along slowly, if they can bring somebody in who is definitively a pretty good defender. And I think in Claxton's case, pretty good would be doing him a disservice. So
I just think he checks a lot of the boxes. There would still be a lob threat for Cade, which is very important. But ultimately, they need a center too who can protect the rim.
I mean, I think, you know, there's always been this kind of range that Nick Claxton costs around $20 million. If you're Detroit, I would think you'd have to probably overpay a little bit to be in the conversation there. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, we touched on, obviously, Tobias, Miles Bridges.
Maybe you can Maybe you work out a sign and trade.
I mean,
Brooklyn maybe entering. If I were Brooklyn, I would seriously consider a rebuild of sorts after this season. And with the draft coming up, I think they need more star power. And
well, they've been positioning themselves for a bit of a reset in 2025. So it's certainly interesting there. You know, Noah Clowney came on, but they kind of view him as more of a four next to Claxton at the five. And they want to keep him long term. They don't want to lose Nick Claxton as an asset for nothing. So to your point, is a sign and trade a possibility down the line in the next couple of months? Maybe. But yeah. For now, they're operating as if they want to keep him in free agency, and time will tell on that. By the way, we're talking about all this obviously with the notion that they are not going to, that they're going to decline that almost $20 million team option on Evan Fournier. Is that the presumption you are operating under?
Yes.
I just had to make sure.
Yeah. No, and I paused because I didn't want to make it sound like I haven't, I'll say this. I haven't really asked if that was what the situation was there, because I kind of just assumed the answer would be yes.
I always try to fully try to assume, because like in theory you could pick it up and trade it, but I'm of the same mindset as you. I think they go more for the cap space route and use that space maybe to acquire a guy. I gotta ask you, just because I feel like it was a hot topic towards the trade deadline for a hot minute there, do they revisit the Zach LaVine trade talk conversation?
I mean, I would assume so. Again, things are in limbo because you don't know who's going to be making the calls, right? Is there in this process, early stages of the process of a president of basketball operations hire? I mean, listen, at the end of the day, they need to get more talent, more high-end talent, and Zach LaVine would answer that question. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't want to say for certain that that's something that the new person will entertain, because I don't really know who that new person will be. So in theory, you would think that they would explore all options with somebody if somebody of Zach LaVine's caliber of player is available. But I don't know for sure if there will be as serious of interest as there was at the deadline.
Gotcha. I could see that scenario for sure playing out. You did touch a little bit on the president of basketball operations search. You had written a piece on The Athletic, and you mentioned, I believe it was five guys to maybe keep an eye on. Among them, John Horst, Neil O'Shea. I think Dwayne Casey made that list, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm on there. Yep.
And who were the other two that I'm slipping my mind right now?
John Hammond. Mm-hmm. And Bryson Graham in New Orleans, who I feel like would probably be more primed for if they were to replace Troy Weaver at GM than president of basketball operations. But
well, I'm going to throw a caveat your way at that. I was of that mindset as you, but I want to break those down with you from my vantage point when I saw the list. Some of those I had heard. John Horst had been floated out there by some people around the league for the past couple of weeks, speculatively, because there's a lot of uncertainty in Milwaukee right now. The window for a championship is closing somewhat rapidly. Chris
He's
Middleton
next
is
to have the finger pointing as just there's a revolving door.
Yeah.
Coach already. And
a lot of coaches being out. Doc Rivers got there and he already said it was going to be like climbing Mount Everest of a task, which don't even get me started
when you have Giannis and Dame Lillard, but
yeah, you know, listen, man, I'm telling you now, to start off your tenure saying how hard and you don't wish this upon anybody. You got two top 75 all-time players, and I guarantee you they're higher than 75 on that list. You're in the East. Pretty much Boston's the only team that's really the top team that you're saying, man, that's who we got to go through. Like, I did not like that mindset at all. And, you know, for the Bucks, Chris Middleton, great guy, still a good player, but not the all-star guy he was because injuries have kind of limited him a little bit. Brook Lopez, still a really good player, but not getting any younger. Giannis, I know they call him the Greek freak, but this could be the playoffs that the injury bug finally gets him. And you've got Dame Lillard, who wanted to go to Miami, didn't end up in Miami. Now he's in Milwaukee, and you're dealing with all this. You're dealing with a lot of stuff outside of basketball and his personal life. It just seems like maybe for John Horst, did they want a championship? Does it make sense maybe to have a fresh start? And you know, maybe you get a long-term contract and some big bucks. It could make sense.
And you know, another caveat. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
You might have been getting ready to say it, so I'll let you finish.
No. It's all good. Go ahead.
I was just saying another caveat is John Horst is from Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, look, to your point, that certainly factors in. And for John, I think it's interesting. You mentioned John Hammond. Look, I think they got a great thing going in Orlando. They're still on the rise. John, to me, I know he has some Pistons ties, but if it was me and I'm an older guy, I'm enjoying the sunny weather in Orlando with my team on the rise. Personally, I understand why you mentioned Dwayne Casey. I think that's much more of an outside shot. We touched on Bryson. Who's the last one I'm neglecting right now?
Neil Olshey,
Neil, certainly I've heard from other executives trying to, you know, get back in game. I'm trying to remember if he had a connection to Aaron Tellem.
There is one, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get the plausibility of it, but I mean, I would rank in order, you know, probably John Horst one. I think, you know, if you have Monty Williams there, you have to almost.
I think if Monty is the coach next year, there's a good chance Bryson.
I agree.
Is working for Detroit. That's obviously a big if Monty's back, but I think that would be.
All right. Well, you know what? You just went into my next question.
Okay.
You said it's a big if. You said it's a big if. This guy just signed one of his contract. I'm trying to think. Is he as much as Steve Kerr and Pop?
He was the highest when he signed it. I think Pop.
When he signed it, right. He was the highest paid coach. And now you're saying to me, that's a big question.
Well, like, I mean, if you ever heard, they just won 14 games.
I hear you.
Which is worse than last year without Cade.
I hear you, but like the money. Like, hey. What are you doing with that? You're just gonna fire the guy and eat that money?
Listen, I think.
Can I give you a quick caveat? Listen, I understand that Monty wasn't exactly itching to go to Detroit during that process. They certainly interviewed Kevin Ollie, Charles Lee, Jaren Collins, and when they weren't satisfied with that trio. For whatever reason, they pivot to Monty. They offer him a bag. Then they stuff the bag with more money. And then they decided to bring the Brinks, the trucks and really just flood it as if they robbed a bank and gave him all that to convince him to take the deal. It signaled to me that he didn't necessarily want to take it, but it was an offer he couldn't refuse, not to be all Marlon Brando from The Godfather, but that's what it seemed like. And so now, certainly it hasn't been what Monty thought it would be, nor the Pistons. There was some speculation, I think, around the league about whether a buyout could happen. I don't really know
I see why Monty would do that. Yeah.
Right. I was going to say, I don't, if you're both sides, Well, I mean, the only way, I guess, plausibly you could see it for Monty is if he says, listen, this situation's not turning around better. If I get most of this money and I can go out and get a new deal somewhere else, maybe it behooves him. But I don't think it happens. My question to you is this.
Mm-hmm. Well, two things. I think your points are strong. Monty, and I respect the hell out of him for saying this during his intro presser. He's like, I'd be lying if I said the money didn't play a big part in it. And listen, I respect that. Like, guys always dance around that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I would also say, like, NBA owners have a lot of money, as you know. I'm not sure 60 or 50 million sounds like a lot to us. And I think that's a drop in the bucket for an NBA, for most NBA owners, right? Say the vast majority.
Fair. They are over $1 billion, these franchises, at like the bare minimum. So,
right.
And Lord knows they're worth way more than that. So go on.
Right. And like, if Goris wanted to, he could sell like a sliver of his ownership and pay for it. Like, there's, mm-hmm. I think we see the money and obviously relate it to our lives and are like, oh God, like me personally, I don't care how much money I made. I would lose. I could have $600 billion. I would sweat giving somebody just $60 million for nothing, right? That's just me. But, I mean, these guys have been rich for a long time. I'm sure they've spent $60 million on a lot of things that go and come and go. But I would also say, like, I don't think it's, like, out of the realm of possibilities. Listen, we talked to Goris. He talked to select media around Christmas and said, like, he was doing things like speaking to Monty about rotations and like stuff that you just don't really hear owners saying. So it's certainly, I don't know. Like, I don't know if he comes back. Like, there's part of me that thinks, I mean, he does, but there's part of me that doesn't, that thinks he doesn't. And I'm curious to find out. I think who they hire as president of basketball operations will be very telling in that regard.
Well, fair enough, certainly. With that said, I mean, open-ended question. Do you have a percentage on Monty Williams returning? What do you think it'll be as of now, given the candidates that you mentioned?
That's tough. I think the situation has gotten a little weird. I think it was interesting, Goris's comments all the way back in December. The fact that they're hiring a president of basketball operations and giving that person full autonomy to, if they want to, clear house. Factoring in how much money he makes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're asking me to put percentage on it, I'd say 60-40. He's not the coach next year.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, certainly there's layers to that, and you know, we've got to see who they bring in as a president of basketball operations.
My question to you, that we diverged a little bit.
Sure.
So if Monty, you made the point, like, and I have a counterpoint to it, and it's just kind of what I've been bouncing around in my head. Mm-hmm. You made the point, well, Monty probably doesn't do a buyout unless he thinks he can get another job somewhere, right? Are we, opening a question for you. Do you think, I guess it's not open-ended. Do you think if, given how the situation has gone here,
right,
and how it went in Phoenix, mm-hmm. Like, do you think there's going to be another job lining up for him here? And maybe is that part of why he wouldn't even entertain a buyout and would like to try to turn things around here in order to, like, he either has to be at, possibly be at peace with, I don't know where my next head coaching gig will be and I'm fine with that, or he's not at peace with, I want to still coach several years down the line and I'm not sure what could happen. If I take a buyout here.
Okay. I think, sure. I mean, first of all, this is the whole point of these type of podcasts. We, as writers, debate this stuff and we think about it. and we go back and forth. For me, I'm looking at it as if you're mining, even if you don't have something lined up, is it better than the alternative of this team is not good and it's not necessarily going to be good next year? Like, I'm not sitting here saying this team's a playoff team next year, certainly.
Right. We don't,
and I don't care.
It's April, it's early.
And unless they make like a really huge star, like I just don't see it. So yeah. With that in mind, it's like maybe it takes a year off. Who knows? But is the alternative better than this? I mean, it might be. You see, the thing with Monty that was interesting this whole time, I don't know if Monty is a guy that is a rebuilding coach in the mold of, let's just say, Kenny Atkinson, for example, right? A player development guy. It's like, first of all, Monty Williams has thrived a majority of his career with Chris Paul as his point guard, okay? So that's number one. Number two, that Suns team was loaded with talent and he maximized it. You know, if there's a situation where a team underperforms in the playoffs and they think they're a coach away, maybe they look at Monty and revert back to the Phoenix tenure and think that he could be rejuvenated. It's plausible.
Possibly.
Yeah, these are all, and again, sure, these are all concepts where we're talking about big picture, but I mean,
I'm not sitting here saying he's like a terrible coach. I'm just saying, I also understand
the thought.
If Detroit were to part ways, I could understand why too.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously like for Troy Weaver, correct me if I'm wrong on this, 74 and 244 in his tenure.
I'm gonna be honest with you, Mike. That sounds right, but that means I sat through all those two. So I try to remember, a lot of the last, a lot of those games. But yeah, it's, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. What, 14, 17, 23, and 21 or something like that?
Sounds right.
Sounds close to 74. Yeah.
thanks for
bringing it up. As I said, now I'm playing all of it in my head and just the last 4 years. I just had a front row seat to it all. And I want to make it clear too, like, yeah, obviously they lost and they've gotten record worse each year, but I was then and still am in the camp, but like they needed to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to do what they did. I think the most glaring issue as it comes to like Troy's tenure here so far is just the frugalness that they've had, right? Like they just haven't really invested significant money in the pieces around their young players. And right. I think they rely too much on their young players. It's not like anything that's not, I don't think, super like unfixable, right? Like if I were the owner, I'd be like, yeah, we're spending this summer. Like we got to. And then maybe they do, right? Like I would just say that's probably been the biggest hurdle he's had to try to jump is spend money and try to acquire, like, not like if this breaks right for this guy, like we got NBA rotation players. I think it was just too many young guys to depend on, too many things going right for them to be competitive.
So kind of a, I don't know if I want to say yes or no. You can give a percentage if you want, because obviously you got to see who gets the president job. But you think Troy Weaver is back next year?
So this is my thing. I think that it would be very hard. If I were Troy, why would I want to seemingly be demoted?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't. Do I think that Detroit values some of what he brings to the table? For sure. Specifically the scouting stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a world where the door is open, depending on who they hire for him to come back. But if I'm Troy, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, why would I, if I have a option somewhere else, like, why would I want to work under somebody when I was just quote unquote running the show for the last few years? I just find it kind of hard. And listen, I think this president of basketball operations, one, I think it's good for the Pistons to do. They need a clean reset, as the kind of the outside perception of them is there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen like this.
Agreed.
And a lot of teams have president of basketball operations. They haven't had one in 6 years.
So this is kind of like a clean, fresh reset. But I also kind of get a sense like, is this hiding or is this being used as kind of the blanket for Tom Gorris not necessarily wanting to admit any possible mistakes he's made in terms of hirings and allowing and kind of having it known that the president of basketball operations has the freedom to hire and fire people as they please and can kind of disguise it as that. So I just think the fact that they're going for a president of basketball operations after this season, that specific title is very interesting and will lead to a trickle down effect, I think, but we'll see.
Well, I guess with that in mind, and I got to ask
last thing really quick. Mm-hmm. My thing, this is the question. If I were ownership, what would I ask? This is what I'd ask myself as it pertains to Monty.
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel like there is a chance that 20, 30 games into next season, I will want to move on? And if there's a part of you that says yes, then why not do it now? When you're starting fresh, like that's the thing. Like you can't go into the middle of next season and if things go bad again, then do it. Like it's just already chaos. Like, so yeah. I just think if you have any fraction of doubt or sliver of doubt of his future running the team, if you do it now, it's a fresh start. It's the off season. You're bringing in a president of basketball operation. So I think that's a question that that ownership needs to ask itself first and foremost.
Well, two of their core guys that are important, you got Cade Cunningham, who's up for an extension. And you got Jaden Ivey. The two, in my opinion, haven't exactly formed an ideal backcourt fit. It seems sometimes they're better when it's one or the other. With Cade Cunningham, is this guy a max extension caliber guy, somewhat similar to what happened with LaMelo Ball in Charlotte, where you're banking on the upside going forward, but he hasn't been an all-star yet? And do you think Jaden Ivey is even here, or is he a trade candidate? Because you mentioned earlier there might be some young guys that got to move.
Yeah, I'm in on Cade. I think what Cade showed this season, in the midst of all this losing, in the midst of not having significant help around him, and for him to get better. Oh, and on top of that, literally missed all of last season. So basically this was year two for him. And if you look at his kind of numbers since, I mean, we can do January 1st, but certainly since the All-Star break, like I'm not sure there were that many players in the league as good as he was in terms of his efficiency as an offensive player and just the points he generated and the opportunities he generated. Like that was kind of, to me, that was the most important thing. I didn't care if the Pistons won 45 games or won zero games and they didn't have an answer on what Cade could possibly be, then I thought this season was lost. If they won 45 games and that still wasn't answered, then I think that's a big problem. But I think I walked away from this season, and I think a lot of them did too, in terms of decision makers. They're like, okay, we have the guy to build around. Like Cade showed significant progress. Not that he was bad before that, by no means. He was a rookie and then he missed all but 12 games last year. For him to develop under these circumstances, I think says a lot about who he is as a player and what it could look like if you get more competent players around him. Like I think Detroit only has about a handful. So they certainly need to address that. And I just felt really good about the season Cade had. And yes, I would max him, because aside from me believing in what he could be as a player, I think he's still, whether or not you're like, you don't feel as strongly as I do. I think you probably feel, and I'm not saying you specifically, just the audience or whoever that may be. You do need kind of something to show for this rebuild that started 4 years ago. Right now, the only thing that's really shown that they've had to show for it is Isaiah Stewart was a solid pick in a very solid pick in the teens in 2020, and has turned into a solid NBA player. And they gave him an extension last summer. So I think you just need something to show for all these years of losing. And I think showing that you have the piece to build around would be a good start. And as for Ivy, I think it's interesting, right? Like, I agree with you that pairing hasn't really
worked well. And I think primarily it's because Ivy's shooting has been up and down. Like, I think for that pairing to really, really work, one of them has to be an elite shooter or close to it. And I think that person has to be Ivy, because as much as there's upside with him having the ball in his hands, I still think most people would agree that the best option for the Pistons to win is for Cade to have the ball the most, right? Just in terms of his playmaking, his size, just the pace in which he plays with, I just think that it'd be hard to talk yourself into a world where Cade should be playing off of Jaden. And for all the good qualities Jaden has, like, he does need to improve as a playmaker when he gets downhill. He needs to improve the finishing at the rim. And he obviously, I think most importantly, needs to become more of a consistent 3-point shooter for that really to work with Cade. And it hasn't yet. He's had some months where he's absolutely shot the lights out. He's had some months where he couldn't buy a basket. So it'll be interesting to see whoever comes in here, what they do, because I do think, like, there are some interesting options the Pistons can take. Like, as I mentioned before, like, if do you see what, like, a Ivy Duren and the top pick this year can get you in the trade market, right? Like, if you're keen on getting somebody like Nick Claxton, like, you can fill that void there, right? So I think they have options in which they can get creative. But as I said at the top of the show, the only reason we're talking about this is, like, the possibilities of having to move off of one of these young guys is because of the season they just had. I don't think they have the option to have any type of season close to this next year. And I think the only way to acquire NBA players, solid proven NBA players, is one, through free agency, but primarily, as we talked about, through trade. And really the only thing they have to trade are young players and the pick. So I think it's just a natural talking point with how bad Detroit's season was and how hopeful they are that doesn't happen again.
So with that in mind, we'll wrap it up with this. You mentioned about that draft pick that they could potentially include in trades. And I'll say this, if they keep the pick, I just have this hunch that they're going to end up with, like, the number one pick. No obvious, this is just a total gut. You know, with that said, I haven't had my Sunday sauce yet, so, you know, don't, like, hold me to it, but I absolutely could see them getting.
What is Sunday sauce?
Oh, James. Italians. Come on. Every Sunday. Oh,
okay. All right.
Meaning, like, I'm on an empty stomach. But
okay.
As far as...
That sounded kind of crazy.
I mean, I'll say this. Simone Fontecchio would get it. But
Yeah. That's me. Now I'm learning. Now I know. Now I'll bring that up to Tech when I see him. I'll reference Sunday sauce.
There you go. So if they keep the pick, I mean, obviously they can go a bunch of directions. It would be kind of interesting if they ended up with a kid like Matis Bezelis, who can kind of put the ball on the floor, shoot a little bit. And it's worth noting his agent is Michael Tellum, the son of Aaron Tellum. Just figured I'd throw that out there. But you kind of alluded to it about the possibility of them trading the pick. I mean, is your understanding or belief that they are going to shop wherever they land high in the lottery as a trade asset to improve sooner than later? Like, well, what's your thought on what they do with this draft pick coming up?
I mean, they should. I think they should. This isn't in talking to certain people around the league, like, I think there are teams who will see picks 1 through 3 as pretty valuable. Even though this draft class has a lot of question marks, especially at the top. And I think Detroit would be happy if they landed 1 through 3 in terms of just the prospects that are there. But listen, man, I have a tough time seeing how anybody in this draft class, and again, even the terrible 2014 class or 2013 class, whatever year it was, netted two guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame, right? Like, every draft class has somebody. But I just think with where Detroit is, I think the best way to not be where Detroit is to utilize the trade market and get creative with trades. And like, in my head, what if there was, like, I don't know, like I'd have to sit down and, like, think about it. But like, if you could get
two or three B minus or above B minus to B plus players by using trades for the number one pick, assuming they got it, and two of your young players, like that helped you, right? Like that puts you in a really good spot to be significantly better next year. And then you fill out around the edges with through free agency, through exceptions and other trades possibly, right? But I just, to me, I think, and it's hard to say again with the flux that is currently going on and them figuring out what the next steps are, but I'll just say if I was running the show, like I'm seeing what I can get for that number one pick if I get it.
I certainly think whoever gets the president of basketball operations role would do the same thing. It certainly behooves them. But James, we covered a lot with this team, and I think you kind of mentioned it earlier on. It very well could be a transformative offseason for this team with a lot of roster overhaul. And I implore everybody listening, everybody who's going to read this transcript on Hoops Hype, to make sure you're keeping up with James, who is on it. He's one of my favorite beat guys in the NBA. And despite Detroit's, woeful past couple of years, hasn't affected his coverage. He's done a great job, unearthed some really good stories, and done some good reporting, which to me, when you have a team that is struggling, makes it even harder. And I think it shows how good James is personally and is somebody I worked with. So
I'm going to cry. Thanks, man.
Well, listen, don't go soft on me and get a box of Kleenex. But I say that with all due respect. I've seen the work you do. I work with you, bro. So
I appreciate it, man. You're one of the hardest working guys in the biz. So I appreciate you, and that means a lot.
Thank you, brother. And I want to thank you again for joining me and to everybody else who tuned in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members like James Edwards, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following James too. He's at JL Edwards III. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.